So I want to thank everyone for coming out early in the morning to listen to me try to make sentences. I want to thank the other organizers, Mary Beth and Scott Chang, and especially Ruth for everything she's done with Quest for the last few years and kind of keeping it in the limelight and keeping the conversation on uncertainty going. So I won't talk about Quest because Ruth just did. But my involvement with this RCN started pretty much the year it got funded. I was a grad student of Ruth's at the time, and I've kind of served as the unofficial secretary, being a bad millennial and only tweeting papers on uncertainty. So with that, if you go to the Quest website, currently the first sentence is, ecosystem studies often report values for pools and fluxes without any indication of uncertainty. And that was 5 years ago now, and I guess the question I'm going to ask today is this still true? Do we still need Quest? Or how far have we come, I guess, in 5 years? So to answer that, we conducted a survey that we unveiled at the LTER All Scientists meeting a year ago, where we polled researchers about the sources of uncertainty they're reporting, and also like what they thought was important, and then how they handle kind of commonly occurring issues. So I'll talk about that today. I'm going to run through it pretty quick. First, I want to just kind of give a little bit of background on what we're calling like the uncertainty taxonomy. So this is adapted from a Mark Harmon paper. But kind of two broad categories of uncertainty you can think of are natural variability and knowledge uncertainty. Natural variability is what pretty much everybody, I think, thinks about and knows, right? It's just the way things vary through space and time. And then knowledge uncertainty is our measurement error. So you can think of that as our kind of the precision and accuracy of the instrument and the user of the instrument. So we have a pretty good handle on the precision of a DVH tape, but you also have to consider the person using that and how tight they're pulling, etc. And then finally, model error, which can be broken further down into the error in the model, which is I think what most people think of and they report. So that's just your uncertainty in the regression, for instance. But there's also error in model selection, which is much less thought about, I think, and a lot harder to quantify, but can potentially be pretty important. So with that, we kind of divided our ecosystem into four kind of main areas. We had streams, precipitation, soils, and biomass, and we identified or tried to identify all of the major sources of uncertainty that go into all of these areas. And so then for each of those sources of uncertainty, we asked people whether or not they're reporting this source, whether they know how to report it, and then whether or not they feel that the source is important. And then we also asked how they identify missing and unusable values. So this is the slide that picture we always show of a weir at Hubbard Brook that's obviously not collecting good data. Below that, there is actually from H.J. Andrews, but there's a precipitation collector under that snowbank. So once you've identified them, how do you handle these values? How do you deal with things like analytical values below detection? And then whether or not people kind of had standardized values for their site or whether it was kind of left up to the individual researcher's discretion as to how they deal with these things. So we distributed it via SurveyMonkey online. Like I said, we kicked it off at the LTER All Scientists meeting. And then we further distributed it to a number of listservs and then had some colleagues help us out at other governmental agencies. So we cast a pretty wide net. There's a lot of overlap between the groups and the email lists. Probably a few people in this room filled it out. So in all, we got 90 sites at over 13 countries on 6 continents. We got PIs from every current LTER site. 135 respondents total, so we had the most responses for biomass, but we had 28 people fill it out for soils, 35 for streams, 30 for precipitation. Getting people to answer surveys is hard. It's not easy. About two-thirds of the respondents were primary investigators, and the rest were mostly postdocs and grad students. So I'll start with the soils section of the survey, since we're at the soils meeting. So kind of broadly in soils, it kind of parsed out to be about half natural variability, half knowledge uncertainty. The things that people seemed really interested in were sampling error, which you'll see in a second. But we asked about sampling error and spatial variation in chemistry, bulk density, coarse fraction, horizon depths, and then spatial and temporal patterns for both mass and chemistry. So I'm going to show a lot of these in the next few minutes, so I'll just kind of go over the first one. They're all set up the same, so if you just look at the top panel, these are all the sources of uncertainty for soil chemistry. On the y-axis here, you have basically the percent of respondents that answered the question yes. The black bar is whether or not they report the source. This kind of stripy bar is whether they know how to report the source or said they know how. And then the third bar is whether or not they thought it was important. And so it's stacked with, so there was three categories. We had rarely important, often important, and sometimes important. And so what's stacked here is the often and sometimes. So you can kind of think of that space between the top of the bar and 100% is not important, or people thinking that it's not important. So I guess really quick, by far the most reported source, the most well understood and perceived importance was soil chemistry and mass sampling error. This makes sense. We know that soils are super variable, so I think that's, and that's also what most people learn about quite early, right? As mean in the standard deviation. So sampling error was the most reported. Less often reported, but perceived as important, was sampling error and horizon depths, both for mass and for chemistry. I think the next talk is going to touch on that a little bit. And then another one that I'd just like to point out that was rated as not reported often, but seemed pretty important to people, was sampling error and the coarse fraction. I thought a lot about this just in terms of, you know, working on a number of field crews, and you go out there and you're taking cores, and if you hit a rock, you move over, right? Like, that's what everybody does, and so I think there could be a systematic bias in coarse fraction in quite a few studies. So biomass sources, I won't go through all of these, but there's quite a few measurement error or measurement uncertainty sources, and part of that reflects the fact that there's grasslands and forests, and so there's a lot of different ways to sampling biomass, or that you might be sampling biomass. But yeah, again, mostly knowledge uncertainty here. So this panel looks at vegetation chemistry. Again, sampling error here, by far and away the most commonly reported, the most important. And then next in line, analytical uncertainty in chemistry was fairly well reported and seen as pretty important. So biomass uncertainty, so both of these panels are just total biomass, sources for calculating biomass. First thing, again, sampling error, the most reported, seen as the most important. A lot of these kind of weird measurement errors that I mentioned before weren't commonly reported, weren't quite seen as important. Things like error in plot boundaries, and if you're revisiting the same plot the next year, are you measuring the same plot exactly? Error in species ID was rarely reported, but seen as more important. That could be potentially important for selecting your allometric equation, for instance, or if you're, you know, looking at chemistry and you have the species wrong, that'd be bad. And then finally, something I just wanted to mention was biomass model selection, not commonly reported, but thought of as relatively important. We know that this is important, so there's been a couple of papers fairly recently that have kind of looked at this. So on the left, you see kind of the range of values that you could get for a single large tree in the Pacific Northwest for five different species, and just using different models. And they're all defensible models, given the fact that, you know, if the equations aren't developed at your exact site and you work in the Northeast and there's, you know, three equations for sugar maple to choose from, what do you do, right? And then on the right here is allometric estimates of sugar maple foliage based on two equations, both published in the Northeast. And as you can see, they differ quite a bit in what your answer is. And, you know, and compare that to something like analytical uncertainty in your lab instrument. If you're multiplying this by a leaf concentration, right, your lab QC is going to probably be within 5%. And here you're seeing 20 to 40. So potentially it could be important. So stream flow, something kind of interesting is that it's pretty much all knowledge uncertainty. That's because unless you're comparing two streams to each other, the natural variability is... I mean, I guess there's temporal variability, but... So we looked at stage height, discharge relationship, gap filling in flow data, gap filling in chemistry data, analytical uncertainty in chemistry, the model error in your flux calculation, the model selection, and the error in the watershed area. And what you see here is a little bit different than the soils and the biomass people. The most important... or the most reported but least important was analytical uncertainty in chemistry. And important but underreported was error in watershed area. It's underreported because how do you get at that, right? So precipitation sources, similar, mostly knowledge uncertainty, unless you're comparing variability between rain gauges for some reason. But rain gauge efficiency, undercatch and overcatch, gap filling, and then your model uncertainties, and then your lab QC. Here people called model error and gauge interpolation important, but it was very underreported. I thought that was kind of weird, so that would be, seems like that would be a logical one to put, right? Because I think GIS will give you that, the error in your interpolation. So now I want to talk just a second about a paper that came out this summer led by John Campbell, where he actually took all of these sources for stream flow and precipitation and threw them all into a Monte Carlo and basically calculated the uncertainty in the net hydrologic flux of calcium. And so the thing that probably surprised me the most was our error, or at least, and this is just, I should back up here. This is only at Hubbard Brook. This doesn't necessarily represent all ecosystems. But it is interesting that at least at Hubbard Brook, you know, the net flux of calcium is an order of magnitude higher in stream water than it is in precipitation, but our confidence in it is actually less. I guess I would have just intuitively guessed that stream flow would have been a bigger... more uncertain. But so here what you see is all of the sources, both for precip and stream flow, that, and then their relative contribution to the uncertainty in the hydrologic flux, and they're kind of ranked in order. So precipitation, chemistry substitution was the biggest source of error out of everything, right? So what I'm going to do in this next slide is flip that, and you'll see that order still ranked here on the left. So precip, chem gaps being the most important, gauge discharge being the least important. Again, just at Hubbard Brook, not everywhere. But then over here, I ranked people's responses as far as what they viewed as important, whether it was often or occasionally. I weighted it to get kind of an importance index. And what I found out was kind of crazy, or at least interesting, the things that were actually the most important, at least in the Campbell paper, were pretty much things that people were saying they thought of as the least important, and vice versa. So people seem to think the streamflow flux calculation, that the error in that model matters, and it didn't seem to nearly as much as things like just gaps in the record. So with that, I'm actually going to kind of breeze through these pretty quick because I want to have some time for discussion. Assigning values below detection, this was a little bit surprising because I always kind of just heard half detection was the standard, but a lot of people are reporting zero if they get a value below detection, and that's going to lead to an underestimation of whatever you're doing, right? And a fair number of people actually just omitted the values, and if you're doing that, you're overestimating, right? Because you're getting rid of all your lowest numbers. So food for thought, and if anyone wants to talk about gaps during the discussion period, I'm happy to do it, but I'm not going to talk about them right now. So in summary, everyone is reporting at least some sort of error. There's error bars on things. sampling error is usually what it is, and it's viewed as the most important source. Analytical uncertainty is also very commonly reported. Depending on the situation, may or may not be important. It really depends on your other sources. And model selection is probably the most important but most overlooked source, and that's probably because it's really difficult to quantify. So I'm going to end just kind of with that original question from the beginning. So if the premise is that ecosystem studies often report values for pools and fluxes that are an indication of uncertainty, is this still true, and do we still need Quest? And has anyone in the audience noticed a shift in kind of the way we're talking about things in the last 5 years? Or, yeah.
What do we need to hear?